Now, my name is Natalie Hansen, and this is being put on by University Women, and I'll be your moderator this evening, and we're going to start this with our school superintendent, Boyd Kaiser, and he will be talking about the school levy.
Thank you, Natalie, and thank you, everybody who showed up tonight. My name is Boyd Kaiser, and I'm the superintendent of schools for the Ocean Beach School District. I get a really good thing to try to get you to vote for, and that is our schools. We're in a bit of a crisis right now, and you've been reading the paper. You know we're in tough economic times, and the tough economic times have hit our schools. We have seen, over the last decade, not only decline in state revenues, but decline in enrollments and higher costs for health care and payroll costs, and it's put us in a bind. Last year, we cut over $600,000 from our school budget. This year, we're going to have to cut another $400,000. When the state met in Olympia, just at the last session, they knew that we were not going to be able to meet our obligations and continue to deliver a quality educational system. They just didn't have the revenue. And so what they did is they said, local districts, if you're finding yourself in such tough straits that you need additional dollars, we're going to authorize that you go back to local voters and ask them for additional local support for schools. Currently, about 20% of the funding for schools comes from our local M&O levy. It stands for maintenance and operation. And you see the signs about once every 3 years, we put them up, we have our campaign, you know, support your local schools. Well, this year, we're coming back a little sooner than we thought because there just isn't enough money in the coffers to run our schools. And so we, at the last legislative session, they said, you can go back and ask your voters for an increase in the amount of money that you get with your local levy. Currently, we have a levy that runs 2009, 2010, and 2011. In February, we were planning to come back out to the voters and say, can you now approve our next three-year levy in 2012, 13, and 14? But because of the state legislature, we're coming out now and saying, can you add a little bit more, a supplement to our 2011 levy? And when I think about whether or not we should ask the voters to do that, I have to weigh the economic impact that it has on each individual voter and the economic impact it has on our community and the potential impact that it has on our schools. The biggest question I get from voters right now is, boy, do we really have to do it? I mean, is it really a crisis for our schools? And I can tell you it is. I mean, we are down to, there's not a lot left to cut. We're down to basic services. And so we are asking voters to approve a one-year, for 2011, supplemental M&O levy. It will cost you about 28 cents per thousand of assessed value. It will end after the 2011 year, and then you will expect a new three-year M&O levy coming forward. If we don't have that, we're going to see cuts in teachers, we're going to see cuts in secretaries, we're going to see cuts in custodians, we're going to see cuts in extracurricular and co-curricular activities, supplies, textbooks, all across the board. So I'm asking you to support schools as you've done in the past so graciously one more time. The ballots are coming out July 30th, so you should see them next Friday or Saturday, and they are due back by August 17th. It is a mail-in ballot. So at that point, I think, Natalie, I made it within 3 minutes, and so
you
I'm
were
open
good,
for
Boyd.
Questions.
Okay, next we're going to bring up our people running for state representative for position two, which would be Brian Blake and Tim Sutton. And we'll start with Brian Blake.
All right. Thank you very much for the invitation. My name is Brian Blake. I live in Aberdeen, Washington with my wife, Deborah, and our four dogs. We have three boys and six grandchildren. A lifelong resident of the coast of Washington, my family came here to the Lower Columbia region in 1888, and actually 1871 on the Oregon side, and so very well grounded in the heritage here on the coast. I have been in the legislature for 8 years now, and I have achieved a chair of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, which is exactly where I wanted to be. Natural resources here on the coast is so critical to our economy, from the logging and the fishing, both the commercial fishing and sport fishing. And so that's, I believe, critical for our district, and I'm proud to serve as chair of that committee. I also serve on the Capital Budget Committee and have been proud to have some of the things we've been able to do on that committee in bringing the Community College Annex to Iwako and the Pace Building remodel there was just a fantastic thing to see. And I also serve on the General Government Appropriations Committee with Representative Tacko. And this is a new makeup of the Budget Committee, where we have a Ways and Means Committee and then three budget committees feeding that committee so we can get more legislators involved in understanding that. So there's a General Government Appropriations, an Education Appropriations, and a Health Appropriations Committees that are then analyzing the budget. And I think the legislature as a whole is getting a better understanding with that makeup in mind. So with that, thank you again for the invitation, and I'll turn it over to my opponent.
Good evening, and thanks for coming here and having me here to the University Women. These opportunities to talk to people are far and few in between there. And the biggest thank you, however, to all of you that came here. I've knocked on thousands of doors, and I have found out that only about 4% of people are interested in politics. You belong to this very, very special group. Welcome. And thank you again. My name is Tim Sutinen. I am a businessman, a father, and my wonderful wife is here too, of 17 years. We live in Longview. We have a bunch of kiddos. I have a little computer shop, do IT service, stuff like that. In other words, the small business computer guys. Many people wonder why I would be running for office with all that kinds of stuff already going on. Well, tonight I brought most of the reasons with me. Josh, Caleb, Aaron, Mary, David, Scott, Chrissy, Nikki, Amy, and Vivi. We must leave a prosperous Washington for our children, not a bankrupt, high-tax state with flip-flop politicians who are controlled by mega corporations. Remember I-960? The two-thirds requirement for tax increases? Anybody remember? Remember the 4% of people who are interested in politics? Why is that? Maybe because most people think their votes don't count, and the politicians do whatever they please regardless of the will of the voters? My opponent, Mr. Blake, says on his website, "I truly believe that we must work together to restore trust and faith in our democracy." Mr. Blake, where was your trust and faith in democracy when you voted to suspend Initiative I-960, which was overwhelmingly approved by the 19th District voters in a direct democratic election? Then let's go on to the next step, the logical step, which was the largest tax increase in the history of this state. On April the 10th, at the Aberdeen Daily World had this statement from Mr. Blake concerning the $800 million tax hike. He said, "I'm opposed to it." Yet, on April the 11th, one day later, Mr. Blake voted for the latest largest tax increase in the state's history. Mr. Blake, I have a pair of flip-flops just here for you. Be proud to wear them. Then let's talk about campaign endorsements here. Let me read you some names you might recognize. In these campaigns, you have people who endorse other people, right? Then let me read you a few names here. Reynolds American Tobacco Company, Philip Morris Tobacco Company, Chevron Oil Company, British Petroleum Employee Pack. These are some of the biggest donors to Mr. Blake. Guess who is his biggest donor? In fact, twice as big as all the individual contributors combined. Walmart.
Mr. Sutinen, not only to stop. 4% of Mr. Sutinen,
yes.
We're down to our 3 minutes.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Only 4% of the people money comes from the voters. This is very short. Remember the 4% of people who are interested in discussing politics. Can you blame them? Mr. Blake, do the right thing and send the oil slick, tobacco stained sweatshop money back. Folks, the big corporations won't get any favors from me. I believe you know how to spend your own money better than the government does. I will never vote to increase your taxes or limit your freedom. Thank you.
Okay. Before I turn this over to the audience for questions, I think it's only fair that we allow Mr. Blake to respond to some of this.
You know, it's simple to reduce this stuff into sound bites, but this is the most difficult time that I think this state has faced in decades. And when you're faced with choices between not delivering services to our seniors, mental health services, healthcare to children, yeah, I took a tough vote, and I voted for that revenue. I think it was the right thing to do, and I'm proud of my service in the legislature.
And with that, I'll turn it over to the audience for questions. This gentleman right here.
Hi, Marshall Tate, Ocean Park, Washington. I've got a question for both candidates. Tim, in the most recent legislative session, they had a very difficult time balancing the budget. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the problems as you saw it and what you would do in the next session, and then have Brian talk about it too.
Oh, sure. The last legislative session was a pretty interesting one. They ended up spending, by the way, that was an excellent question. They ended up spending about $1 billion more than they did the year before when it's all said and done. I'm sure they'll come up with some other numbers, but that's where at least the Evergreen Freedom Foundation says that they spent about $1 billion more than the year before. How about stopping the spending? How about being a little bit fiscally responsible? How about rolling back some of the programs that they put in the go, 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 go years of high property tax rolling in from the building boom from 2006 on?
You know, I think we made wise investments. Too often you hear politicians running for office, they're focused on 2 and 4 year cycles and worried about their reelection. And there was some extra revenue came in, and we made those investments in early learning. And, you know, 20 years from now, legislators won't have to build a prison because we made those investments, and human lives were changed. And so I'm proud of the investments we made.
The gentleman in the back.
Hello, thank you. My name is Larkin Stintz, and I'm an organic farmer. I'd like to hear from both of you what your opinion is on food security. In the last couple of years, I've watched, like in 2007 when we had the hurricane and I-5 was cut off, you couldn't get food out of California, which is where most of our food comes from. This last year when we had a super freeze, it got down to 9 degrees here on the coast, and most of my greens turned into black mush, as did most of the greens and most of northern Oregon and Washington. So we need some form of a regional food security system. Either of you have any things to say about that?
Well, food security is important. That's why the federal government advises people to have at least 72 hours worth of food in their homes. And regional food banks, what he's talking about, are a great idea. I believe those can be very effectively managed on the private side, and that's where I see people know how to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I serve on the board of directors of the Grays Harbor, what's now called Coastal Harvest, the Food Bank Distribution Center, and I think that's one part of the solution, and I think a personal responsibility, as my opponent says, is also important. But I think we can do more to foster regional food supply. I think Senator Hatfield's bill from a couple of years ago, where local farms and healthy kids, I think we can do better. And And I think we have to support the entire agriculture sector, but I think there's areas for improvement.
Yeah, the government can bring you the bacon, but they'd first have to kill your pig.
I think the gentleman over there in the back's been waiting.
Davis McBride, I'm an NRA member. I would like to hear from each of the 9 candidates if they support the gun rights.
Thank you, Davis. This is Brian Blake. I'm actually a life member, endowment member of the National Rifle Association, and actually have been fighting for gun rights since well before I was in the legislature, and will continue to do that after I'm in the legislature, gone. So thank you.
And I am a member of the NRA, a life member. I carry a gun because a cop is too heavy to carry.
Thank you. This lady right here.
My name's Judy McPherson. I have an extremely unpopular question, and obviously I don't care. I would like to know if either of you has a feeling for how much of our state and local budgets go, schools, etc., for supporting illegal aliens. Told you it was unpopular.
I don't know that we have an accurate count of how many folks are in the state illegally. I think it's too many. I am just angry with the federal government for not stepping up and dealing with this issue. I think it's shameful. This goes back to the 1980s when Ronald Reagan granted amnesty and promised to secure the borders, and it never did occur. And I think it has to occur, and we're putting this burden on states and local governments. I see that, you know, the sheriff is here, and the cost is unacceptable, and it must be dealt with. But I don't have an accurate sense of how much the money
because
is.
I just get a sense that our budget would be greatly improved if we spent the money on people who are here legally and whose taxes are supporting this.
Yeah.
This is primarily an issue for the federal government. They must secure our borders. This state is, what the state can do, on the other hand, is I have never met anybody who has any problem with legal immigration. Everyone who comes here to work legally, they're welcome. Now, what people have a problem with are these illegal loafers. Disneyland has a great solution for it. Turn off the rides when they want him to go home. Turn off the rides.
Are there any other questions from the audience? For yes, sir.
Hello, John Adams. I guess this question is more for Mr. Sutton. Easy to say cut spending. How about some specifics? What do you think? Where would you start cutting?
Thank you very much. Excellent question. Let's start, let's roll the clock back 6 years. Washington was in a pretty darn good shape in 2004. When we go back to the spending levels, we just look down the books, what was spent back then, our deficits will go away and everybody's going to be happy.
Well, that's not real specific.
Well, very specific, because this government has hundreds and hundreds of different expenditures. You can't list all of them here, possibly. We would run out of evening here.
So no spending on early learning or mental health funding? That's interesting.
Government can bring you the pork, but they'll first have to kill your pig, and that's what they've been doing.
Are there any other questions?
My name's Melissa Goldberg. I'm from Ocean Park. And the sore subject was brought up. And it ties in very deeply to me for all of the other issues about education and health care. And I tend to be more of a unifier than a divider. And I think that health care is something that every human being is entitled to have. I think a full stomach and a decent place to sleep is something that every human being is entitled to have. And I'm sorry if we have to tax a few wealthier folks and make corporations pay their fair share and perhaps get the federal and government to enforce their laws against the employers who hire the illegal immigrants, then we probably wouldn't be dealing with this issue. And I'm just wondering, what is it we can do that makes federal government more accountable for prosecuting and supporting the laws they have to progress to protect us from illegal workers? And how do we still address the human concerns of people who are in need every day? Food banks here don't have enough to feed this entire county. And where is that money going to come from? And where is the compassion from human beings going to come from?
Do you want to take that, Tim?
Sure. Thank you very much for the question. Very valid concerns. As she mentioned and pointed out, the federal government is not keeping our borders secure. And we already discussed that. The feds have to do it. I don't want to burden the state government into spending all kinds of money chasing after the illegals when it's really the feds' responsibility to do that. Now, when it comes to the freedom, healthcare freedom, I believe that we have in this country a very generous population, people who have, even though they have been taxed to the hilt, are still willing to give more out of their own pocket. I don't think that purpose of the government is to provide everything for everybody. People have to make some decisions on their own about their health care too. Of course, we will help those who are in dire straits and cannot help themselves. I mean, we're not, that's just anti-American in my opinion. But by and large, we are a wonderful people. I came to this country, I love this country, this is an awesome place, and I've never seen a place as generous as this is. But I dislike forced charity. And forced charity has never dug, never made anybody happy, except maybe the recipient who's on the dole or something like that.
Brian?
You know, I think it's important that we, as a government, are there to provide services. You know, if you just let the market decide, then you wait till the epidemic is in full rage before you treat the disease. And I think that's just ridiculous. I think it's important that we have local health departments and have people have access to health care and can go to the emergency room. And I think we do need to do better and make sure that all people here have a personal health care provider and deliver those services. And so I think we can do better.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips.
Hi, my name is Jerry Phillips, and my question is for you. With regards, twice tonight you've mentioned that the federal government taking care of immigration issues. And so if the federal government is not going to take care of the immigration issues, how do you plan on protecting the state of Washington? Because if they don't step up the plate, something has to be done. So if they're not going to, and you see this going on, what's your plan?
I already answered. Thank you very much, by the way. And I already answered that. Turn off the rides. We have to.
You know, I've heard a lot of remarks, turn off the rides, kill the pig to get the bacon. I'm sorry, it doesn't buy it for me. I mean, there has to be some validity to what you're trying to say. Give me a specific.
Thank you. I believe the state of Washington is adequately protected from the threats. Like my opponent said, we cannot burden our police, our sheriffs, and all kinds of state people with enforcing all kinds of federal law. That is the purpose of the federal government. I don't know what else I can say in there.
Did you want to take a step? No. Okay, no. I'll take one more question, and then we're going to have to go to our next group. The lady in... Oh, come right ahead. I'll take two more questions.
Actually, I don't have a question. I have a request. Could the candidates please stand so that we could see them in the back?
They actually asked me if they could do this standing in their defense, and unfortunately, because we're recording and all, I had them sitting. So it's my fault. The next...
I'm a small business person, and I find that regulation is just pushing jobs out of this state, and my family has moved to Arizona because they can't, their business can't exist here. What can you guys do to keep business here and get us jobs again?
What kind of jobs? Yeah, I'm going to sit down for the microphone. Yeah, Brian Blake again. You know, that's a lot of what I do, and I was down in Raymond South Bend doing this yesterday, is meeting with small business folks and working as an ombudsman between these agencies and the small businesses. And last week it was with the cranberry growers down in Grayland. And you know, the system of government is not perfect, and I think that's one of my duties as a legislator is to do that. And so I'm constantly amazed that that people that are struggling and need help don't contact us, and we work for you. And you know, I would hope that you would contact me this next week, and I'd be glad to go to work on your issues.
Well, let's look at where the money comes for the state legislators. It comes from big corporations by and large, plus other special interest groups. Now, what have these people done in the last 30 years? Let's look at back in 1980, when Ronald Reagan had the miracle of job creation in the early 80s. We had roughly 50 licensed occupations in this state and in the country as a whole. With 30 years of lobbyists giving all kinds of money to these state legislators and lobbying them for all sorts of special privileges and so forth, now we have 1,000 different occupations and all kinds of licenses that people have to apply for, pay yearly, renew, run paperwork for. Where is it going to end? We need to start deregulating, not just talking about it in committees.
You know, this last year we started regulating people who do tattoos, and you know, if my opponent thinks that's big government, then you know, with all the health risks that are involved with that, then so be it. I stand. I think that was a good law.
Is that the your opinion on April the 10th or April the 11th?
It's my opinion today.
I'm going to thank Brian and Tim very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.